Right now, Mike, we got a guest.
Yeah, we've got Lewis Cam from the Seattle Times with us right now. He's been doing, like every reporter at the Seattle Times, a tremendous amount of work on the coronavirus in Washington State. Most recently, he's been focused on testing troubles at the state, local, and state level. Lewis, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
So let's talk a little bit about the story you did with Ryan Blethyn just recently first. And it appears that while we are getting a little better at our ability to deliver tests and test people and process those tests, we still have a ways to go, at least from what I read in your story.
Right. And now it doesn't seem to be as much of a capacity issue that there's labs. There are labs available that are testing. Primarily, the University of Washington Virology Lab is, testing something like 3,000 plus patient samples a day.
Huh.
The problem now, though, seems to be that a lot of the discretion of deciding, you know, who should be tested falls upon hospitals, clinics, and doctors when people are making appointments and trying to get tested. And, you know, the discretion they use is based on the guidelines from the State Department of Health. And that basically, you know, says use your discretion on a case-by-case basis. But, you know, there's priority groups for who should be getting tested first. And a lot of folks who, you know, may seem to fit in a priority group are still complaining that they're not able to get tested. And a part of that seems to be because of some shortages in supplies. PPEs, we've all heard about the personal protective equipment running in short supply as well. Healthcare workers are putting themselves at risk if they're testing patients and they're not, you know, adequately equipped to protect themselves. So that's part of the problem. Part of the problem has to do with swabs, not having enough swabs available to test people. And part of it is just really discretionary clinic to clinic based on, you know, what's available or who's available to test people.
So how is it then? I mean, have we changed the criteria? When this started and we were ramping up testing, figuring out who needed to be tested and who, like you said, the priority groups involved, how have we changed that in any way? I mean, can more people now get tested? Have they reconfigured the criteria by which you can ask for a test and then get a test?
Yeah, it's changed quite a bit over the past 3 or 4 weeks. You might remember early on when, you know, it seemed like nobody could get tested. It was very limited to basically high-risk travelers, people who had been to China, who had primarily, if you'd been to Hubei province where the outbreak began, you were automatically a high-risk patient and you could get a test. If you had been traveling to China and you had symptoms, you were a automatic tested person. But outside of that, it was very early on, you know, not very many people were getting tested at all. And of course, that has evolved over time. And, you know, it kind of coincided with all of the testing problems that the CDC was having with its initial test kits. So even though, you know, the president and everybody else was saying, you know, everybody can get tested, well, that's not true because they didn't have the test kits that were functional when they were changing these guidelines. So it has changed a lot. And today, you know, supposedly anybody can get tested. The discretion that was up to the doctor to decide, you know, should you be getting tested? And if you're just mildly symptomatic and if you get a test, it's not going to change your treatment anyway because you should be home, you know, keeping yourself away from people and staying isolated for 2 weeks anyway. They might just say, you know, you don't need a test. We're not going to, waste resources to give you a test that's not really going to do you anything. If you're a high risk person over 60, or a pregnant woman, or a healthcare worker, or a first responder, or someone who has a fever over 100.4 degrees, they're probably going to test you, and you're going to be in the high risk category, you know, the high priority category.
Have you heard from any of the you said this is because this is all being left up to different like hospitals and clinics and individual doctors. Have you heard from people who are being more, let's say, conservative about testing, why they are being that way?
You mean individual doctors and
yeah, because I'm assuming that wouldn't it be better for all of us to know exactly how many people have been infected, even if you exhibit symptoms maybe and they say assume you have it, wouldn't it be better to know definitively whether or not someone did or didn't have it?
Yes. I mean, theoretically, yes. In a perfect world, they would want to be able to test everybody. But unfortunately, once we got kind of behind when we didn't have functional tests and then we were, you know, there was like a whole month where we weren't testing. Now we've been ramping up and trying to catch up. And in the meantime, we're having all these problems with, you know, our healthcare system being overwhelmed and our shortages in PPEs and, you know, lab materials, that it's just not, they just don't have unfortunately, they just don't have the resources to test everybody who's, you know, symptomatic,
right,
or even mildly symptomatic, or even, you know, possibly have it. So they have to prioritize them. But you're right. If in a perfect world, they would want to test everybody so you could go back and do the contact tracing and figure out how we might be able to contain it, or if there's, you know, hot spots popping up here and there.
So one of the health experts that we've talked to, a whole bunch of them, I'm sure, as you have, one of the people said that one of the most frustrating aspects of the testing, especially as now as we've expanded it to some degree, is, I think, what you were talking about, this inconsistent criteria that would prompt one clinic or one doctor to say, we need to get you tested, might not prompt another one. Is that because the rules as they're written at the state level are vague, or is it because people are just taking it on themselves to make judgment calls about this, or a little of both?
I think the rules are, you know, I don't think they're vague. I think they spell it out pretty good. I mean, discretion-wise, they say you can test who you can test. But I think the way they're applied on a clinic-to-clinic basis is where you get the inconsistency. And if, you know, one clinic might be totally out of swabs, so they're going to limit testing, you know, to those very high priority groups, where another clinic might have that material available to them. So that's where you get the inconsistencies. I know, like, one of the persons we highlighted in the story you were referring to, Mike, she called her primary care doctors at Swedish, and they were like, look, you don't quite meet the criteria. You have 100-degree fever, but we're supposed to test at 100.4, so we're not going to test you. If your symptoms get worse, go to the ER, that kind of thing. Well, she wasn't satisfied with that, so she, you know, she called a different clinic that a friend recommended, and they said, yeah, come on over and we'll test you. So that's where you're seeing some of the inconsistency. I guess where it's getting more dicey, though, is that, you know, if you're, you know, in one of those high-risk categories and you call your primary care physician and they still aren't testing you, then it's getting kind of serious.
Is there any concerns locally about the accuracy of the tests? I mean, there's been a lot of reports about 30% inaccurate. I'm not sure that applies to the tests here in Washington. Are the folks, health officials in Washington State, confident in the accuracy of the tests here?
Well, I mean, accuracies of testing like this and viral testing in general are always kind of a concern. And we just did a story today about a guy who, a pilot, airline pilot, who was feeling sick, had a lot of the symptoms, went in, got tested, and a couple days later heard back from his primary care telling him, you know, you're negative, you're all in the clear. And so he's like, you know, lucky me. And him and his partner went out and went grocery shopping. And then 2 days later, he gets a call from the place that actually took the blood and, you know, sent the test into the lab, and they told him, no, actually they misread your chart there.
Wow.
And you actually are positive. And so he felt awful about it. It was a nightmare for him. But we're hearing that's really rare, that wasn't even a false negative with a test. That was a person problem where they misread the chart. I talked to some of the clinicians at the University of Washington lab that are running most of these tests, like 75% of the tests, and what they're seeing is that the tests are highly accurate. They're using both the CDC test and the WHO test. So they do both of them, and they say they're comparable and both seem to be accurate.
We're here with Lewis Kam of the Seattle Times. He's been covering, like a lot of reporters, the coronavirus, especially here in the state of Washington. Lewis, let's say that somebody is exhibiting symptoms, somebody has a fever of over 100.4, or they know they've had direct contact with someone. What should they do? Is calling your primary care provider step one?
That's step one. Yeah, they recommend you definitely should call first. They don't want you to show up. And part of the reason is that they're overwhelmed, number one. But number two is if you come into a waiting room or whatever and you're feeling sick and you actually don't have the virus, you're putting yourself at risk of an infection of being in a waiting room where there's other sick people. So yeah, you're definitely supposed to call ahead. And then what's supposed to happen is, you know, you'll get an assessment basically over the phone where they'll say, you know, what are your symptoms? What's your temperature? That sort of thing. And then decide whether or not to schedule an appointment for you.
I noticed also in your story that there is more Washington's mortality rate is dropping. And I think that's largely a math situation, correct? I mean, in that it's more tests have been done. The mortality rate is dropping to something more along the lines of what was expected. I mean, is that a fair interpretation of it?
Yeah, I mean, and I should say that it's changing rapidly, right? So from day to day. So when I did the story you're referring to, the UW folks looking at their numbers on that particular day, basically felt like there could even be an argument of the testing we've done so far that we're so quote unquote bending the curve or getting to our apex point and trying to get on the other side of it. And we're of course a little bit ahead of the rest of the country because our outbreak started here first. But I did some of the math, and that's always scary when a journalist is doing math, but I crunched a bunch of those numbers, and essentially what it was showing is our mortality rate has kind of dropped from about 8% to down to 5, or it's starting to get into the 4s even, based on the total positive cases we've had versus total deaths we've had. And part of that might have been because, you know, very early in our outbreak, as we all know, you know, some of the first people hit were in a nursing home in Kirkland, and they are, you know, at the very high risk for mortality, unfortunately, for coronavirus. So I think those numbers might have been skewed a little bit for us just from the get-go because of the outbreak at the nursing home. But if you're starting to look across the country at other quote-unquote epicenters like New York, for instance, their mortality rate is actually climbing now. So comparatively, we're kind of, I guess, in a better place. Although, of course, we don't want to be in this place at all either. But yeah, that's what it's looking like.
And when we think about the whole issue of testing, is the goal to, I know the goal is to ultimately, at least short-term, flatten the increase and flatten the curve, as they say. But are the University of Washington clinicians and other folks, are they looking to get to a place where everyone is tested, or do they feel like that's not necessary? We just need to test, you know, this certain strata of the population that is most likely or the most at risk?
Yeah, I think the UW is more like we're going to test who, you know, whatever doctor or hospital or clinic sends us stuff, we want to be a bit ready and available to be able to test it. So they've just been increasing capacity to test, and they've done a really great job, actually, probably, you know, a model for the country, really. On the front end of it, when you have, like, when you're talking about, you know, our King County Public Health Officer, Dr. Duchin, Jeff Duchin, he would say, yes, theoretically, we want to test everybody. And the reason why we want to do that is for containment purposes. And even now, when we know that there's an outbreak that's happening and it's widespread and it's spread throughout the community, they still want to test as much as possible, because when we are, you know, coming down or over the bend of that curve, we're still not out of the woods.
Right.
We still have to do social distancing, and we still got to do testing to see if, you know, there's any hot spots that crop up, you know, while we're coming down on the other side of that. And so that's what they want to do. They want to keep testing, not only for, you know, diagnosing for individuals just to find out, you know, that they've got it and they perhaps need more attention, or they have to be watched because of they're in an at-risk category, but also because of containment purposes. So you want to go back and trace, you know, who you had contact with, and, you know, be prepared that way and be able to contain it as much as possible.
So the last question, what is, when they talk a lot about contact tracing, and the way I've heard it applied, that you figure out who's been in contact with whom, and you sort of go through that sort of that tree, if you will, is contact tracing as possible now, given how far in that we are? Are they still doing that when someone comes in and tests positive? Do they start doing contact tracing immediately upon that point?
That's my understanding. Yeah, they're still doing it. And part of it is, you know, people are still being infected now, and maybe you're in an essential business and you're still going to work. And if you just got sick, you know, diagnosed this week, they would want to isolate you immediately, obviously, but they would also want to, you know, find out who you had been in touch with, and maybe those people need to get tested or whatever as well, so they're isolated, and getting them out of the essential workforce. So I think, yeah, that's definitely part of it.
That is Lewis Cam, reporter for the Seattle Times. Thank you so much, Lewis, for talking to us here on Cairo Nights.
Yeah, thank you, Lewis.